You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you registered to vote? Headcount is a nonpartisan organization that works with the music and entertainment industry to get fans to vote. To update or check your voter registration status, go to headcount.org, where you'll find all the information you need to be ready for Election Day.
Headcount tours with musicians to help concert attendees register to vote, but you don't need to leave your house to register or to get voting info. Register to vote by visiting headcount.org.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mixtape Memories. I'm Jenners.
And I'm Matt Hartspade.
And we're here today with a very special guest, Abreu Yildiz, a portrait and documentary photographer. She put out this amazing book, We've Come So Far, The Last Days of Death by Audio. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Well, thanks for having me.
I feel like I met you so long ago, and it was like back in the days when I was managing Dirty on Purpose.
Exactly.
It was like you and another friend of yours, right? And maybe it was like an article, like from a Turkish publication, I want to say.
Well, could be, but there were like a couple of magazines from Istanbul that I was doing like some work with. Could be one of those. Was it with Dirty on Purpose?
I want to say that it was, and her name was like Melis?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Jesus, I can't believe. Yeah. Okay, so it is like for Trendsetter magazine, and she was like interviewing people, and I was taking photos, but that didn't last that long. I think we did like 3-4 pieces.
I feel like that was like the first like ever communication, and then I just started seeing you around town at shows, and like, because that's what we did back then, right? Like, we were at shows like every night.
Yeah, literally every single night. I don't know how we had like that much energy and that much money to spend on like shows and drinks and, you know,
it's true. Food. Yeah, because I know in the beginning, like, I paid for concert tickets, so like I would plan that shit out like ahead of time and like go to the box office, grab some tickets, and like have it on my calendar for a while.
I think I remember meeting you at Practice Space. Like,
yes.
When Dirty on Purpose was in there, like I just came to say hey, and they were like, oh, this is Jun, their manager. And like, that's how I remember. But again, like, it was those times that I don't remember how I met anybody or if I met them at all. Like, you know, because after a while, just because you see everyone.
It's a bit of a blur, to be honest. Yeah. How did it all start for you? Like, how did you get from Turkey to New York and kind of start your whole journey into this music photography world?
Well, I came here to study. I grew up in Ankara, Turkey, which is the capital of Turkey. Everybody knows Istanbul, but nobody knows Ankara. It is more like Washington, D.C. And like, I mean, even then, like, I had like interest in like live shows and, you know, music in general, but there weren't much happening there. And I just moved here to go to school for advertising and marketing. And my whole dream was like to work at an advertising agency because, you know, like what better place than New York City to study and work at the advertising industry. Of course, yes. Like the minute I started working in advertising, I hated it with everything I have. I'm like, I feel like I'm either like a completely different person right now, or like I had like a completely different understanding of advertising.
Yeah, probably.
Nahi, I graduated with the same degree and also worked in advertising for a period of time and wanted to pull my hair out. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is just, I don't know. It's brutal in every sense. Like, I mean, psychologically, I think it is, I mean, manipulating people into buying things that they probably don't need.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, it's weird. But anyway, so that's like, that's how I moved here. And it took me a long time to figure out where the music is happening. When I say long, I mean long. Like, I moved here in 98. So it was like 2001-ish. Mm-hmm. I figured out Lower East Side is like, you know, there are things happening in Lower East Side. But before then, like, I mean, I didn't have any money to spend anyways, but like, I had like no idea what was going on. I actually, I was thinking it this morning, the very first concert that I went to was The Cure.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one. But, like, I learned that the show was happening the same day. I'm like, I'm going to go and wait online to see if anyone sells a ticket. And I got the ticket for $100. That was, like, the most money I ever spent ever since I moved here. And it was a terrible show. I was so disappointed.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Where was it? MSG?
No, it wasn't MSG. That's the other thing I was trying to remember. I think Hammerstein Ballroom.
Oh, wow. That's pretty intimate for them.
Yeah, I think it was 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was like the very first one. And it was so, like, I had no concept of like people selling like fake tickets or anything like that. But anyway, my tickets were real though, so.
Yeah, I know. I always worry. I've never bought like tickets from scalpers because I feel like I'd be too paranoid that it's fake.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, they look sketchy. Like the people.
Yeah, you can tell. Yeah. I've only once ever in my life bought off a scalper off the street, and it was because I think years and years ago, maybe 15 years ago, Interpol was playing Radio City and they did multiple nights. And I went the first night and it was great. And then I wanted to go the next night, but I didn't want to spend full price on a ticket. So I waited until like 5 minutes before they hit the stage to see if there was a scalper outside that was desperate. And I did find one who sold me a really good seat for $20. And it was a real ticket. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I spent like 90 the night before. the one I pre-purchased.
Yeah, I know. I was going to shows like all the time and all the venues. Like, there's so many venues back then. That's how it is. Kind of like they all blur together after a while. Like,
yeah. Like, I mean, especially like in Lower East Side, it is like as if like every door was some sort of venue at some point.
Absolutely.
Like, especially on Ludlow Street. But you know, I was also thinking. So the me like finding out about like the local scene was. Actually, A Place to Bury Strangers. I saw them play at Coral Room. Do you remember?
I vaguely remember that room.
Of course I remember the name, but I don't think I've ever been there.
So it had real mermaids swimming inside a ginormous
That's
fish
right.
tank.
Oh my God.
So pretty. So, and it is so weird. It was in like Meatpacking District or somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, I went there to see another band, which I'm not going to name, but it was a shitty band. But they photographed well, so I was like, yeah, whatever, I'll take their photo. So, and A Place to Bury Strangers was headlining. My jaw dropped. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, I love this band. Like, I mean, I fell in love with them, like, the minute I saw them. It was amazing. And it was with their first drummer.
He was like a beast. I think
he was a beast. Like, I couldn't believe.
Yeah, he was the craziest drummer.
I remember, I'm like in awe, like watching them on stage, and their set ended and he kicked his drum kit, and I remember one of his cymbals were like flying towards me, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. Literally. And I thought, like, you know, he was like angry at something, but turns out he was doing that more often, I guess, than but it was so exciting to see it.
I remember, like, I was working at ASCAP at the time, and one of my coworkers was dating the bassist.
Oh, Tim.
And she was putting them on these like showcases that the company was doing. And I remember, I think the first showcase was like at South by, the one that I saw them at was at South by Southwest at like Hard Rock Cafe or something. And yeah, I know, it was a terrible venue. And like they were crazy. And I obviously instantly fell in love. And then, that was at the time I was managing Dirty on Purpose too. And so I think it was like maybe their record release show, or there was some show we had at Pianos where I put them together on a bill, and then they fell in love with each other.
They're amazing. For some reason, I always thought that, like, just because, like, you know, they became roommates, I always thought that, like, they knew each other from way before or something, because, I don't know, it just felt like they knew each other.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it was, like, definitely, like, an instant, like, love affair, I think, between the two bands. Yeah. And then the rest is, like, history, you know? Like, they were all involved in, like, starting Death by Audio, and then that whole scene started. So it was, like, a crazy, you know, series of people introducing each other, you know. Yeah. So that's kind of like, I mean, like, it's probably still like that, but, you know, when I was like heavily involved, like, in the industry, it felt like that's just what people were doing. They were just like introducing each other. There was like tons of like networking going on, and it felt very kind of natural.
Yeah.
Now I feel like more force or something. I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm like, I've been thinking about it. It is maybe like just because like I'm not out like every night like I used to.
Yeah.
Maybe it is still like, you know, happening somewhere else, like in that sense.
It's just to younger people.
Yeah, because I know, like, you know, I can tell like from the, you know, bands I shoot, they're kind of like clumped together. Like,
yeah,
they're like groups of people together. So I'm assuming, like, you know, Dirty on Purpose and A Place for Strangers, those guys were, like, kind of clumped together, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
they each have, like, I also remember, like, their one of the shows that they did at the back room, like, I mean, the living space of Death by Audio, while they were trying to raise money to build their bedrooms.
Yeah.
It was Dirty on Purpose and A Place for Strangers. It was so cool. I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like watching them, like, look, because they were like playing on the second floor.
The second
which,
floor.
Like, I refused to go up, by the way. It is hilarious because I mean, like, the night before we were like getting drunk with these people, and then they built stairs and a second floor. I'm like, I'm never going up there. Like, totally didn't trust it.
It didn't seem safe, that's for sure. I definitely, like, if I was ever on the second floor, I'd be like, you know, lightly kind of walking
but
around.
But I mean, it endured for like 10 years of madness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it must have been crazy. Like, I was never like the person that could like live with a bunch of people like that. I mean, there were always people there in and out all the time. Like, you couldn't really like have like a normal life. It was definitely like a clubhouse, you know, so.
I mean, there's no way. Like, I mean, I can't possibly imagine.
No.
Like, with that many people involved, like, I don't know. I can't possibly imagine myself living in a situation like that.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it was special.
The idea of it is amazing. I think you have to have a certain personality to be able to survive it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What it all came from was, like, this love of music and art and just being creative with a bunch of people that you like. So I feel like, you know, this must happen with every generation in some way, you know, but this was like ours, you know.
Mm-hmm. this yeah, was our for version. Sure. And also, like, I think the other important thing is that they were all, like, not were, they are all very nice people. Yes. So it is, like, easy to be around. And, you know, especially, like, for someone like me, like, I not barely speak the language, but, you know, it is, like, English is my second language, so conversation, like, you know, it is, I'm already feeling conscious about, like, lots of stuff, but I remember feeling super comfortable. And it comes from the fact that they're, like, good people that radiates that goodness. Mm-hmm. Like, you feel safe with them or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, like, super important when you're kind of hanging out with people every day. No, I know. It's special because, like, you can't, you know, there are terrible people out there in the scene, but, you know, we were lucky to, like, know this group of people. I also thought that Ollie from Place of Very Strangers was, like, the nicest guy. Like, anytime you'd see him, he'd always have, like, hey, what's up? You know, and, like, yeah, he's, like, smile always, on his face. Like,
always excited, always happy, always have something good to say.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, like, I'll tell you a secret that he told me. Because he's, like, you know, whenever, like, a band's cut, like, maybe I shouldn't say this. Well, anyway, but so he sees a lot of shows, obviously, and, like, lots of bands, like, look up to him, and so they, like, they come to get his approval or something, and I'm like, you cannot, there's no way you like every single band, like, you know, no way.
Yeah.
And how is it that, like, you make them, like, feel okay with what they're doing? Like, how do you find the words to support them or something? He said the trick is to say, oh, that set was very inspiring. And I'm like, like, it could be, like, inspiring that it was so good that it could be inspiring so bad that you never want to do that. And I'm like, okay, that's a nice way to say it, I guess.
Yeah, just to stay like positive. That. Yeah, I like that a lot. Because, like, yeah, like, how many times have we gone to see a show and maybe you know the people or you get introduced to them and then you, like, if you don't like it, you have to say something. You don't want to be negative, you know?
What I would do is on my sites back in the day, if I went to see someone I know or someone I didn't know and I didn't enjoy it, rather than writing something negative, I would just ignore it. But then they'll follow up with you and say, like, wait a minute, I thought we hit it off. And I'm like, yeah, we might be friendly with one another, but I hated the music. It's very difficult to say.
Yeah. I mean, you know? Also, it is, like, with music, it is something so personal, like, very personal. Yeah. There's no, I mean, like, A Place to Where Strangers, I love them from the first minute I saw. But I also remember, like, them, I remember they were, like, playing a show, I'm not going to say the band's name, with another friend of mine's band, and even though their music was not good, the room was, let's say, there was, like, 20 people or whatever, and then A Place to Where Strangers comes on, and there's only, like, 2 people left, like, you know, everybody leaves, like, they used to, you know, clear the room, because, you know, it is not everyone's cup of tea, and
it's very loud.
And I think it's okay.
Yeah.
That's fair, yeah. I wanted to go way back and kind of ask you about what you were listening to, what you remember listening to growing up, and what were your favorites back in the day, and did you make mixtapes? Did you receive mixtapes back in the day?
Oh my God, I made that's like the best part. I'm the only person that I know that was making mixtapes among my friends. And I had, like, my brother used to come to United States, like, a lot for, like, business or whatever. So he'll bring back these cassette tapes. And normally in Turkey, the ones we had were, like, 45 minutes, I think, in total, like, both sides combined. And the ones that he brought back were, like, 90 minutes.
90, uh-huh.
And I was, like, so psyched. I'm like, oh, my God, I never have to, like, switch tapes ever again.
Yeah.
So I remember I did one with old Turkish music, which was, like, not necessarily good Turkish music, more, like, cheesy. Not pop, but I don't know. I still like some of the songs, so I'm not going to say.
Of course.
that they were all cheesy. And then another one with like all, you know, European and American bands. I used to like, one of the most influential bands for me was the Velvet Underground. Like, mm-hmm. I loved them. And it is, you know, it is one of those bands. Like, I remember like the first time I heard them, where I was, how the light was, how it felt. Like, I remember everything about that moment. So Velvet Underground, definitely. And Nirvana was like mm-hmm. another favorite. And The Cure. Mm-hmm. And with The Cure comes the Depeche Mode. But I was more The Cure than Depeche Mode. Smashing Pumpkins, but I wasn't really that into. But their, you know, name was around. Oh, Red Hot Chili Peppers. And Pulp was like
Pulp, yeah,
so big, like so big mm-hmm. in Turkey. That Different Class album mm-hmm. was like my favorite. It's one of those, you know, albums that I can, I think, sing along to every yeah. word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, classic.
Yeah, and also imagine this is like I'm talking about a time where there wasn't any internet, so probably whatever I was singing was not the lyrics, but in the general vicinity of.
Well, sometimes the misheard or the missung lyrics are better than the original lyrics anyway, so it works.
That is true. And also it kind of like you make it your own in a way, because it is like that's how it makes sense. That's how you feel connected. So I don't see anything wrong in it.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you moved to New York in the late 90s. And then when did the advertising world end and photographer begin kind of more full time?
Well, okay. So the full time, like, so 2001, like around September 11, actually, was like a really big change for me. Mm-hmm. Because right before like that August, I quit my advertising job and I was like, okay, I'm like, you know, I'm done with it. But I also wanted to see, because like while I was doing that, I was a strategic planner, meaning like I was researching and like kind of coming up with advertising strategies that you communicate to the creatives and they come up with visuals. And I really liked the visual parts a lot. So I was like trying to see, okay, I want to see if I have like any kind of talent or any, because obviously I'm interested, but like I don't know if I could do it. So I took a printing class, photo like a darkroom class. That was in 2001, and also like a graphic design class. And but I was like I was either on a student visa or a work visa. So for that reason, I could never like pursue it as a career, because I had to either work for the company that I was working for. So not till like 6 years ago, I started doing it full time. Before that, it was always like on this, like it was something that I was doing for myself and like for the Turkish magazines and stuff. But so yeah, did that answer your question? I'm like,
it did. No, it did. I should have said this earlier in the episode, but I've been a fan of yours for a long time. So it's nice to finally get to
talk to you
like this.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I know your photos really have a mood to them, and I just love that. And I could tell that you're like trying to like tell some sort of story there.
Well, thank you. It is like it is interesting, because the mood of my photos kind of like stay the same. I think my like technique got better. Like I love moody photos and like little light and all that. So like finally I'm able to get what I want, like what I want to have. But in the past, like it was kind of like, oh, this works, kind of like trial and error, kind of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now I think you have, if I were to see a photo of yours, I would kind of know it's yours based on the style of it and the colors and the light and whatnot.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate it. That's like the biggest compliment you can say to a photographer. Thank you.
I wanted to ask if you kind of geek out when an artist decides to use one of your photos as like the album art.
You mean like if I get like excited,
giddy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean like it is kind of like, that's also what a big honor, like, because it is like, I mean, they're putting their soul and hard into this album, and they think that like your photo you made is matching theirs, and it's kind of like naming their baby or something. You know, like it's kind of like I always feel so humbled. I'm like really like it is very like exciting, and it's sometimes like, you know, sometimes it comes as in like, oh, I didn't know it was going to be an album artwork, but they see something that works and they want to use it. Or it's sometimes like we work towards making one, which I also enjoy, because then I get to hear the album first, like before anyone else, and, you know, try to visualize it and come up with ideas that conveys the feeling of the music. And, you know, that's like, I really like that process too.
I love that. Like, because you're actually like in-depth involved in the kind of creative process there then.
Yeah, like I really enjoy it. Some, you know, some people have a certain like idea like what it should look like, but then some are like completely open to ideas, and you know, that's like, that's really exciting. And you know, especially when they have the idea, and if it is like matching my style, that's like, that's exciting too, because I can see that why they're asking me instead of like, you know.
So. Yeah. But you know, like how some pictures, they're almost like just too many layers of things that are like maybe not the real person, you know, and your photos, they just look like you're just like almost like unraveling everything and like trying to get to like the core of like the person.
Oh my God, you're like, you guys are making me like all red.
See it, but well, I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, like you can really tell. And like, you know, I was going to go to that exhibit that was up at TVI right before pandemic that you did on the women behind the scenes in the music industry. Yeah. And I mean, I could just tell by how everyone who was like a subject of the shoot was reacting to your photos of them, because they're probably not used to like being photographed in that way. You capture something and they like got to see it from your perspective, you know, something in them. So I think like, I think that's like pretty cool.
I think that is like a actually an interesting part of the process, because it is like kind of like they see themselves through your eyes in a way.
Yeah.
Like in a different way than they're not used to, but not necessarily like, and I'm not talking about like, for example, one of the woman in the project, she was like so certain that like, oh, my angle is this, like I know it is, like I like, just because like also she's younger and so she's like so used to doing selfies and stuff. I'm like, okay, that's cool, but let me do what I want to do and then you'll see. And it was actually it was like a full frontal photo, and she really liked it, and she said like, she commented on it saying that you like, you were right or something, like, and it just made me feel good, because like, you know, just because I always thought that she's gonna hate it just because it is not the angle that she's used to. But
yeah, you're able to see something and capture it, you know, and it didn't have to do with angles or anything like that, you know.
And I thought every single one of them was so gorgeous, like I didn't have to do anything. They're like, everyone is like super beautiful. It is as if like, you know, there's a prerequisite to be like, you have to be pretty to work behind the scenes.
You've done both concert and portrait photography now, and like, do you have a favorite between the two, or?
Well, I actually, like, so I started off, like, with concert photography because it was just, like, so much easier for me. Well, first of all, like you were saying, like, I was going out every night, so it was kind of, like, giving me purpose to be at shows, like, without looking like a freak, like, by myself. So that's, and it is also easy just because you don't have to talk to the people, you don't have to do anything, you just go and shoot. And but I was always, and there's like something super exciting about like live photography, just because like I love consuming music in a live setting. So it is like, that is to me very special and very intimate. So I like, I'll always love that. But I think like, if I have to pick one, like, I would go with portrait photography, because just because it is so much more intimate, like to connect with a person on that level, and because nobody is comfortable in front of a camera, so like being, you know, like talking to that person and like making sure they're doing okay, you're doing okay, so it is kind of like a whole exchange, so it is not mm-hmm. like only your reaction, but it is kind of a collaborative effort, which I love. And you know, I get to get a sense of their personality, and like, so that's always fun. Like, I think I find like people in general really interesting and fascinating, like, so I love getting to know a person. And it is like, I'm not one of those people who can like chat up people, like, you know, some people, like, I have a friend, like, she can talk with anyone on the street for hours, and I'm like so jealous of her in that sense, like, I can't do it, like, so that's kind of like my opportunity to yeah. like talk with a person, and I feel like I do better like on one-on-one than like just meeting people, like, I don't know. And so yeah, I guess like portrait photography is like, I enjoy it a lot. If I mean, but I love them both for different reasons. Like with portrait, it is like more controlled, like you're in a setting, you literally have like control over everything, except of course if you're doing like quick portraits at a festival or something, then they put you in a room mm-hmm. saying, okay, shoot 20 different people and make sure they all look different. That's different, but most of the time you have like full control. And the thing that's exciting about the concert photography is like you have no control over anything, like mm-hmm. including lights or where you're standing, where what they're doing, like, so that's like very exciting in its own way.
Some of your portrait subjects are these iconic stars like Blondie and David Byrne and Laurie Anderson and whatnot. A, is it kind of intimidating? And B, when you go into that shoot and it's a subject that's been photographed, you know, for decades upon decades, how do you kind of envision the project so you kind of make it your own?
Well, I guess, like, you know, Laurie Anderson would be like a great example to give, because first of all, I think like the way I think, like, you know, someone being iconic or famous or whatever, it kind of like ends in your head in many ways, like, I don't know how to explain it, but let me try. So it is kind of like, you know, it could be like, let's say Oliver, right? Like, he's like the, I'm talking about the lead singer of A Place to Be a Stranger. He's like the sweetest guy. I might be like more nervous taking his photo than like someone else, just because mm-hmm. I'm like thinking so much more highly of him than anyone else, like in that sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
So that's like, that's kind of how I feel. But of course, like the, for example, Laurie Anderson, Jesus, I thought I was like dying. So the first time I shot her, it was actually at her place. So we went to her studio and she had like the cutest dog, but I'm like just so nervous overall. But I'm also very nervous before every single shoot. Like yeah. It is like, you know, my partner always makes fun of me. He's like, you've been doing it so long, you can't be. I lose sleep like the night before, like in general, doesn't matter, because it is like, you know, that person is like putting so much trust in you. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah. I kind of feel like kind of crushed under that responsibility, because what if like I'm wasting their time? What if I don't come up, like, you know, they don't like the photo. Going back to Laurie Anderson, so that was the first time I shot her, and I was fine with the photos, like I like them and all that. But the next time I shot her, it was at a festival. And right before I shot her, I actually saw her play. Before she started her set, she was like, well, I watched an interview with Yoko Ono, and she said, they asked her how she feels about Trump. And her answer was like, she started screaming and she just didn't stop. Like, it was just like a one long scream. And she said that, like, she felt like really inspired by it. And ever since that, like, she's been applying it, and it just feels like release of energy. So during this festival, there are tons of people, and she's like, okay, let's do it together. And like, everybody screamed on top of their lungs. And I get goosebumps like talking about it. Wow. I almost cried. Like, it was just so beautiful. And so I'm supposed to take her photos, and but I don't know if she's going to be okay with being photographed or not. But like 2 days straight during the festival, I'm like, if I'm going to get to shoot her, I'm going to ask her to scream. I'm going to ask her to see. So I'm like working myself up. So like she came, she agreed to be photographed. She came, and I was like, I'm trying to explain her like, oh, could you please like, do you think you could do it? And she's like, oh, sure. And then she started like screaming. And that was my favorite photo that I made.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was like, it was really, really cool. And so like, first time I was nervous, second time I was nervous. Then she actually asked me to do her press photos, which I'm like, oh my God, that's another kind of responsibility. And that's like a other level of stress, but every single one of them was like stressful for their different reasons. Because you know, if you're photographing someone for the third time, you would think that like you'll be a little bit more at ease because you know her. But I'm like, like I was super, super nervous. So I guess to answer to your question is like, I'm never like, I'm just like dying inside as I'm shooting it, but like looking all together from the outside.
That's the secret of life. We're all like that, I feel.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it is so funny, like with those shoots, I'm like, I don't remember a word I say. And then like I come out of it like, oh my God, what just happened? Like I can't remember it. Like it's kind of that kind of nervousness.
Well, I think that's cool. I mean, you got, obviously you, with that one instance, you got a photo that no one else would have thought of, you know, because of the story and the attachment to that screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It is like that. Yeah. If it's like, I mean, I might have missed it. Like I didn't hear it, or maybe I was in a different emotional state that didn't mean much to me, but it was just a super powerful moment. I'll never forget it. Like I'll just never forget.
That's awesome.
So now you've come to the point where you're doing this full time and you have your own studio. Is it two studios or one big studio?
Well, it is kind of like there are three studios actually.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
But it started as like, you know, so 6 years ago when I decided to go full time, like when I got my green card. I got my green card 6 years ago. That's what happened. I decided to get a small space to do portraits because I'm like, you know, I can't invite people to my apartment. Like, you know, I'm doing with friends and stuff. So then I started renting it out because, you know, like freelance work is like, you get some and then you don't have anything and then you realize that, oh my God, this is it. I wasn't supposed to be like a freelancer. I'm never going to get another, you know, assignment or whatever. So during one of those freakouts, I'm like, okay, I'm going to rent it out. So at least I won't have to worry about its rent. So it kind of started like that. And then my partner Mitchell was like, well, you know, we are already putting so much work into this. Why not like, you know, invest some money and turn it into a business? So that's how it started. Now it is kind of like, I mean, I shoot here all the time, obviously, but it's kind of his baby. Like it's everything like he did. I mean, obviously I'm helping him like the way he's helping me with my shoot. So it's kind of collaboration, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, because there was just like a new expansion to it that like looked amazing, like,
oh,
really fancy.
Don't tell me about it, because that was supposed to, that was a decision that was made last Christmas, but
wow,
the space was almost ready at the beginning of March.
Wow.
So it's kind of like very stressful.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's life at the same
yeah
time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just had a quick question about your concert photography, because I was watching an interview you did, I guess, a couple years back, and you were just talking about feeding off the energy of the crowd and how in a lot of instances that also shapes the photo. And it's sometimes what goes on off stage as well that kind of builds the aura of the mood of the photo. So I was just hoping you could just touch upon how that kind of that adds into the equation of the whole portrait of the night, you know.
So yeah, that's like absolutely right. You know, when you're going into a show, I think it's the same for bands too. Like, it depends on the crowd. Like, they either play a great show and, you know, they give so much energy and they take so much energy from the crowd. And I think it is the same with like photography as well, because like, you're like, when I'm taking photos, you're like 90% of the time in the middle of the crowd. So it is like, you know, people bumping into you. If you, you know, they're like feeling energetic, that's like lifting you up. If they're like, you know, sad or whatever, it is kind of coming on to you too. I mean, it is kind of like with this pandemic too, we are like connected in an insane way. Like, it is almost like so solid that you can see it. So it is kind of, I think concerts are like the micro version of that. Like, you just like, emotionally and physically, I think you're like super connected, and I love that. I love that about live shows, because it sets the mood for everything, and you know, the photos are as good as the show and the crowd. So,
Speaking of concert photography, and also actually, it was like also documentary photography in a way. The Death by Audiobook. What was it, like 75 days in a row where you were there and kind of documenting the shows and what's going on behind the scenes as the venue was closing? How did that all come about, like the idea for it, and then how was it afterwards after you put it out?
Well, you know, Death by Audio was always it is like such a special place for me. Like, I mean, I think that and A Place Where Strangers, I mean, it's kind of like at the same time my life like completely changed into a different direction too. So it is like, it's really important. So it is like, if anything, like if I'm still shooting today, like partially because of that scene and A Place Where Strangers, I was there like so many nights at the beginning, but then like I kind of gave a break in a way, just because I broke 3 teeth and fractured my upper jaw. I think we were just looking at it, the third show in the official venue.
Oh wow.
And so after that I'm like, okay, I need to take a minute. So but anyway, so it is also, that was also an important moment in my life for many other reasons.
Because
it is also because of that I met Mitchell, who is my partner now. So it's kind of like all connected in a different way. But so when I heard it was closing, I was like, oh my God, I felt like I really need to document it. So I get in contact with Matt and Oliver, and I didn't have like any intentions of making a like a book, but I was thinking, oh, it would be like a family album that I can, you know, give them or something. So I started like going, I wanted to document like the people living in the space, the pedal factory, the rehearsal space, and also the shows, because they invited back all these bands like who kind of grew out of that space. And they, you know, they had like the best intentions. They're like, if we are gonna go out, we might as well go out with a bang, which is what they did, and it was amazing. And so yeah, like, and a couple of weeks into it, and I was like, oh, like I was making so many photos, I'm like, there's no way, like it has to be a book. So it kind of like, it kind of shaped in my head like at the very beginning of it. But that wasn't the first intention. And I'm so glad, like, just so glad I made it. Because it is also kind of like, you know, there are like all these really important spaces in New York City that I didn't get to experience, like Max's Kansas City or like CBGB. or I would say like even like that place Koki's, like which was like not my time. Do you right. remember?
Used to be the levee used to be Koki's, right?
Yeah. But yeah. like, you know, places like I read like or hear about like these places, though that doesn't like compare to the other places, obviously. But it is like even if you're not there, like just seeing a book of photos of how it felt to be there, like I think that was very important. And I kind of didn't want that by audio to disappear without having like a solid visual documentation.
Yeah.
I think it definitely deserves it.
Shall we hop into repeat skip?
Yeah, let's do it.
So our first EP, actually it's the first EP I think that we've reviewed in this segment.
But
is
a worthy
the first,
one.
definitely a worthy one. I mean, it's legendary. Is the first Yeah Yeah Yeahs EP, which is, I believe, from 2001?
Yeah.
I remember them seeing perform these songs at Siren Festival in 2002, I think. It was the year Sleater-Kinney headlined. That might have been the first time I saw them, actually. And I was kind of instantly enamored by Karen O and the band. And it kind of grew from there. And then to this day, they're one of my favorite acts of all time. So I'm interested to hear what both of you think of this EP.
Well, like in my case, actually, so even though that EP was 2001, I actually started figuring out where the live music happening around 2001, 2002. So I was actually late to... Like, I mean, late as in, like, even though I was in New York and into music, I totally missed out on their, like, small shows or the Strokes or whatever. So it was kind of like I was, like, literally right after that. But the first time I heard Yeah Yeah Yeahs was, like, with this EP. And it was, like, it just blew me away. Like, it just blew me away. I think it is because the feeling of it was, like, going very parallel to how I was feeling that moment. For example, in this EP, there is my repeat one is Art Star, which mm-hmm. I love. Like it's one of my
that's favorite. Mine as well. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's not Jin's.
It wasn't my repeat, but honestly, it was hard for me to pick a skip on this album. Like I would probably repeat a lot of these songs, you know. Mm-hmm. But
I mean,
like,
it's so good. I mean, the album artwork is so good. That photo is like amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
and it is. Yeah, like I actually, for the longest time, I thought the name of the EP was Master, which makes sense. But
yeah. The necklace and everything. Well, a lot of people thought it, which I think is kind of funny because it totally makes sense why you would think that.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of like it just makes sense on many different levels just because I think like Karen O is like such a badass and like the way like she, like, I mean, first of all, the mood of that song is like super agitated, and then like calm and like kind of happy and bubbly almost. So I love that. Like, I just love that. And also, like, you know, her lyrics and the way she expresses herself is kind of, like, like, it is one of those things. I want to be like her. Like, I want to be able to be that free and with no concern.
Mm. I know. There really wasn't, like, anyone like her at the time. And I also just, like, related to her, like, being half Korean. Seeing someone like that in the scene be so bold and, like, you know, the fat, like the crazy fashion was like part of her thing. She had like this edgy look to her. She was dating Angus from Liars at the time. She was like fucking power couple, indie rock couple, you know, and like, and I was just like, who is this person? I want to be her. So, like, I know. And I used to do like really stupid things on my blog back in the day, and like one of them was like a parody of like InStyle magazine had this thing called Steal This Look, where they would like take a picture of a celebrity and then like break down their look, you know, and like where you can buy it. And I did a parody version of that called Steal This Indie Look, and it was like, I remember having Karen O on there, and it, yeah, like it was probably like my picture from the Siren Festival that year, and like made me like, you can get this here.
Siren Festival which is one of those festivals that never ended.
Yeah.
It's always super fun to go. And
I know, I miss it. And, you know, there are festivals that are trying to bring back that same feeling, but I think it's just a hard to do because that was such, I always say it's a moment in time, but it's so true. Like, I don't know if it can be replicated in the same way, like, because music industry has changed and festivals have changed, like, yeah. The idea of festivals have changed.
I mean, those free concerts in the pool, do you remember them?
Of course.
Yeah.
Like, incredible. I mean, I don't know how they pulled it off. Or, like, I right now, like, I feel like every single show, I mean, before the pandemic, was selling out so fast. And with those shows, you're always, even though they're free, you were able to get in, which I think was really special. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they had, like, killer lineups.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the pool, they had major indie acts for free, like, right as they were, like, their most buzzworthy. Yeah.
Jelly NYC pool parties. I mean, like, I'll never forget them. Like, they were crazy and in, like, these giant empty pools in the middle of Williamsburg. But, like, it was because indie rock was really just hitting that mainstream trend right then. And that's where, I mean, talking about advertising and marketing, like, this is where companies are spending their money. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I want to sponsor you because you're cool. And you're hip and you're with all, like, the young people, you know, at the time. You know, we were all in our, like, 20s and or so. And that has all changed, you know. And now it's all about what is Gen X listening to, you know. So it's, like, those are the kind of acts that'll probably get, like, that corporate sponsorship to bring you a free festival. But most festivals aren't free. It can be really expensive. And then, I don't know, I feel like most of the lineups kind of suck. So, anyway, off topic.
but all true. Yeah, but all the festivals lineup are, like, kind of, like, same in different order on different days or something. Like, it's just that's how it feels.
Yeah.
Well, Jin can probably speak to this better than I can, but I think a lot of times with the booker, they'll say, okay, if you know, we'll have this major act for Coachella, Lollapalooza, and X, and then you're also going to bring these 10 bands on, and then the same 10 bands and headliner are playing every major festival in the U.S. and in Europe.
Oh, you know? I did not know that. That makes sense, though. Now that's kind of, it explains a lot.
Yeah, it's all, like, a lot of transactions and less kind of curation, I feel like, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, to go back to though, I picked our time, and I feel like maybe, like, just doing this during recording some of these episodes during the pandemic, I always seem to pick the song that, like, could work as a pandemic theme song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like,
no,
I feel like
I hear you.
Yeah.
No, it's funny you say our time, because early in this pandemic, I drew a photo of Karen O, and I quoted our time because I think it does feel eerily, like, of the time.
Yeah.
And then I was reading that this was one of the first songs that she wrote on her own. And I just think, like, I don't know, there's just, like, a real honesty to that song. What did you guys want to skip? Because I feel like, did we all agree? No, we didn't all agree.
I think Matt and I are on the same page with this EP.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was Mystery Girl. And actually, it was an easy pick. For some reason, that I never connected with that song. But yeah. That, I don't have much to say about that track. It's not my favorite.
Yeah, the same goes for me. It is not my favorite either. And I would say, like, Our Time, if I had to, like, that would be my second favorite. But I think with Our Time, like, it got so, not overdone, but it is, like, I heard it so much that, like, kind of, I don't know if I actually like the song or it is because I'm just so used to it that I, like, I don't know. Like, you know, one of those.
Right. Yeah, like, it just grew on you or something.
No, I mean, I like it. I like its lyrics. Like, the whole, the year to be hated. I think it's, like, it's perfect.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys wanted to skip Mystery Girl. I mean, I didn't mind that song too much. You know, I think that, I probably listened to that song a lot back in the day, but it's definitely not my repeat skip now. But my skip was more Bang. And I think it was, I don't know why I picked that. It was hard to pick one, but, you know, as a fuck son, you sucked. I don't know. That always, like, makes me laugh, like, every time I hear it. I mean, actually, back in the day, it probably would have been, like, an anthem or something, you know?
But, like... You know, when that EP came out, I would play Bang on my college radio show a bunch, and I did not know what she was really saying. Speaking of misheard lyrics, I didn't know she was saying that. So I would play it all the time, and then finally, like, someone at the station was like, we're going to get in such trouble with the FCC if you keep playing this song every single week. And I said, well, what is she even saying? And then he told me, I was like, okay, we're going to move to track number two or track three. Yeah.
Well, it's just kind of like me listening to Velvet Underground and not knowing they were, you know, singing about drugs. And
well. Yeah. Totally. Oh, my gosh. You know, the second album we're going to talk about, obviously, is very close to your heart, A Place to Bury Strangers, Exploding Head. That was their second album, and it was their first major label release, and their first on Mute. Totally epic album, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. It's funny, because I think Ollie recently posted, like, a clip from Keep Slipping Away's music video, like on Instagram or somewhere, and that was directed by Greg Wilson, who was like an original.
Oh my god, I remember.
Death by Audio.
Like where they are trashing a TV, no? Like
yes,
TV.
They're like throwing this TV outside of this apartment window. So I was excited when you chose this album too.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. How could I not? Like, it is literally like, I mean, like I said, A Place to Bury Strangers definitely like. The very first band, and those songs are actually, like, before that album came out, they were, like, playing them, like, at their shows. And the funny thing is, like, I remember they were, like, playing once a week at least. Like, they were just playing every night almost, it felt like. And my favorite song is, I mean, I always loved that song. Like, that was always my first pick. I lived my life to stand in the shadow of your heart. It's, like, the most emo...
It is really is.
But it kind of fits, like, it kind of fits, like, not like, it kind of fits, like, me, I guess. Like, I love it. Like, I love the name. I love the song.
I know. It should be, like, the title of a mixtape, actually.
Yeah, it should. I remember hearing them perform that song well before this album came out, Delancey at Mercury Lounge and various other places, and just always thinking that song was, like, such a moment. So I was glad that it was included on the full length. Yeah. That's also my favorite from the release. Although I feel like this is an album that just flows so well, and it's very difficult to pick something that can be skipped. So, but yeah, I think that one, just because that was the first song that, like, I don't know, I felt deep inside of me. And I was glad that the recorded version lived up to the live version, you know, or vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, I think that's like super crucial for, like, I mean, any A Place to Bury Strangers album, just because their live shows are so intense and loud, and so it is hard to get that on recording, I think. But that's I mean, that whole album is, I think, amazing. Also, the Deadbeat,
yes, that's love, like, that.
I love that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm also, just for the record, I'm not gonna pick a song that I'm gonna say that I'll skip. In case listens to this.
Yeah, you don't have to say anything if you don't want to.
No, but seriously, like, I think, again, like, going back to, like, I listened to this album so many times that, or, like, I heard the song so many times in live settings and recording that I feel like I know every song by heart, so there's no way I can pick something to skip. Because it is like, you hear it, it is like, you, this song, I love this song. Like, whenever it comes in, like, in a shuffle or something, I'm like, I love this song.
I understand that feeling. Because it does feel like a collection. So, more than, you know, a bunch of singles or something like that. I think the only skips that I picked were just based on tempo, or, like, they weren't as, like, driving or fast-paced as the other ones, Ego Death and Lost Feeling. But that's the only reason I picked them, you know? Whenever I think of Place to Bury Strangers, I always think, like, loud, crazy, fast, and also, but also like dark, romantic, like, you know, haunting kind of.
Yeah, it is like, it is funny because they're like the nightmare of every music photographer. but at the same time, because like even like the first show, that Coral Room show I was talking about, they played in complete darkness. Like there was just no light. There was one, I think, safety bulb that was hanging in the middle of the stage. So it was just like whenever someone passes through there, like that's like your only opportunity, window of opportunity to take a photo. And now that, like, you know, they're playing bigger stages, it is like the flash and the smoke and, I mean, it's insane.
Just like everything.
But that's that what I love. On. Like, that's just like, it's super cool.
I know, I saw them actually at Brooklyn Bazaar right before that venue closed. In its old location, before the one that was on
Greenpoint Avenue,
where they were in some other location, and
they were like kind of between Greenpoint and Williamsburg, no? BMW.
It turned into like a BMW dealership or something like that.
I didn't realize that.
It is not a dealership, but it is like a, I think like a creative center or whatever. Like they had like, but I heard that it closed or closing or something. So, but see, that's like what happens all the time, no?
Yeah.
Like they take over something just for a few years and then gone.
Yeah. And it's sad because then it displaces, you know, a really great cultural kind of, you know, institution that Brooklyn Bazaar was really becoming, you know, in the community. And now Brooklyn Bazaar is homeless again because, like, that other space, you know.
Yeah, but I feel like everybody's homeless or about to be homeless.
Right? I know.
Yeah.
It's
unfortunately.
Yeah, the sad. You know, it's really scary to think, but I really feel like something is going to happen where people kind of regenerate and regroup and like come together again at some point when the time is right and just start to really rebuild, you know, the culture. Because, you know, as like the rich people are moving away, maybe more people, artistic, creative people can afford to come back and maybe there'll be a new resurgence, you know.
Well, I hope so. And I just think that, like, I was just thinking about it this morning that we all been through like so much and, you know, we've been processing all these like information and emotions. And I think it's just gonna like bubble out of people as like creativity and new projects and hopefully with a clearer head too, clearer head and clearer heart.
Yeah.
I love the way you put that. And I agree with you. I think a lot of people in my life and myself included are just kind of figuring out the next phase of what we're doing in so many aspects, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, there's no going back to normal or what it was. Like, it's just, I mean, I don't know. It is a new, everything is going to be new, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That felt like a really good way to end it, but then we didn't talk about your skip, Matt. So. Oh.
Well, I think also, it was a difficult decision. I ultimately picked the title track just because I didn't groove with that one as much as the others, but I think it's a nearly perfect album. So it was challenging, but if I were forced to, I'd pick the title track.
Yeah. I mean, that track kind of just makes me giggle because Exploding Head, but that's just me being like a teenager. Thanks so much.
This was such a great chat.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Mixtape Memories.
Catch you next time.
Bye.
As a new Western Union customer, you can enjoy a $0 transfer fee on your first international online money transfer. Send money to your loved ones back home the fast, easy, and reliable way. Visit WesternUnion.com or download their app today to get started. And your first transfer fee is free. Services offered by Western Union Financial Services, Inc., NMLS 906983, or Western Union International Services, LLC, NMLS 906985, FX Gains Apply.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.